This is Audible.
The Housemaid is Watching. Written by Frida McFadden. Narrated by Lauren Allman and Ina Marie Smith. To My Family. Prologue. There's blood everywhere. I've never seen so much blood. It's soaking the cream-colored rug, seeping into the nearby floorboards, speckling the legs of the oak coffee table. Perfect oval droplets have made it all the way to the seat of the pale leather sofa, and large rivulets drip down the alabaster wall. It's endless. If I look hard enough, will I find flecks of blood on the car in the garage, on the blades of grass in the lawn, in the supermarket across town? Even worse, it's all over my hands. What a mess. Despite the fact that I don't have much time, I am itching to clean it all up. When there's a stain, especially on the carpet, I was taught you're supposed to clean it quickly before it sets. Once it dries, the stain will become permanent. Unfortunately, no matter how hard I scrub, it won't do a thing for the dead body lying smack in the middle of the pool of blood. I assess the situation. Okay, this is bad. My fingerprints in the house are expected, but the crimson caked into my fingernails and the grooves of my palms is less easy to explain. The darkening stain on the front of my shirt is not the kind of thing I can shrug off. I am in deep trouble. If someone catches me. I inspect my hands, weighing the pros and cons of washing off the blood versus getting the hell out of here right now. If I wash my hands, I will waste precious seconds in which I could be caught. If I leave immediately, I'll be walking out the door with blood all over my palms, smearing itself onto everything I touch. And then, the doorbell rings. The chimes echo throughout the house as I freeze, afraid to even breathe. "Hello?" A familiar voice calls out. "Please leave. Please." The house is silent. The person at the door will realize that nobody is home and decide to come back another time. They have to. If they don't, I am finished. The doorbell rings again. "Go away. Please go away." I'm not one for prayer, but at this point, I'm ready to get down on my knees. Well, I would, if doing so wouldn't get blood all over my knees. They must assume nobody is home. Nobody rings a doorbell more than twice. But just when I think there's a chance I might be safe, the doorknob rattles, and then it starts to turn. Oh no, the door is unlocked. In about 5 seconds, the person knocking will be inside the house. She will walk into the living room, and then she will see this. The decision has been made. I've got to run for it. There's no time to wash my hands. There's no time to worry about the bloody footprints I might be leaving behind. I've got to get out of here. I only hope nobody discovers what I've done. Part 1. 1. Millie. 3 months earlier.
I love this house. I love everything about this house. I love the giant front lawn,
and the even more giant back lawn, even though both are edging toward brown. I love the fact that the living room is so big that multiple pieces of furniture fit inside, rather than just one small sofa and a television set. I love the picture windows overlooking the neighborhood, which I recently read in a magazine is one of the best towns to raise a child. And most of all, I love that it's mine. Number 14 Locust Street is all mine. Well, okay, 30 years of mortgage payments and it will be all mine. I can't stop thinking about how lucky I am as I run my fingers along the wall of our new living room, bringing my face closer to admire the brand new floral wallpaper.
Mom is kissing the house again,
a voice squeals from behind me. I quickly back away from the wall, although it's not like my 9-year-old son caught me with a secret lover. I have no shame about my love for this house. I want to shout about it from the rooftop. We have an amazing rooftop. Oh, I love this house. Shouldn't you be unpacking? I say. Nico's boxes and furniture have all been deposited in his bedroom, so he should be unpacking. But instead, he is repeatedly throwing a baseball against the wall. My beautiful floral wallpapered wall. And then catching it. We have lived in this house for less than 5 minutes, and he is already determined to destroy it. I can see it in his dark brown eyes. It's not that I don't love my son more than the world. If it was one of those hypothetical situations where I had to choose between Nico's life and this house, of course I would choose Nico. No question. But I'm just saying, if he does anything to harm this house, he is going to be grounded until he's old enough to shave.
I'll unpack tomorrow, Nico says.
His general life philosophy seems to be that everything will be done tomorrow. Or now, I suggest. Nico throws the ball in the air, and it just barely grazes the ceiling. If we had absolutely anything valuable in this house, I would be having a heart attack right now.
Later,
he insists. Meaning never. I peer up the stairwell of the house. Yes, we have stairs. Honest to goodness, stairs. Yes, they creak with every single step, and there's a chance if you hold on to the banister too tightly, it might fall off. But we have stairs, and they lead to an entirely different floor of the house. You can tell I have lived in New York City far too long. I was hesitant to come back to Long Island after what happened last time I lived here, but that was nearly 2 decades ago. The distant past.
Ada?
I call up the stairs.
Ada? Can you come out here?
A few moments later, my 11-year-old daughter pops her head into the stairwell so that I can see her thick, wavy black hair and dark, dark eyes peeking out at me. Her eyes are the same color as Nico's, inherited from their father. Unlike her brother, Ada has undoubtedly been unpacking her belongings since we arrived. She's a straight-A student. The kind who does her homework without having to be told a week before it's due.
Ada,
I say, are you almost done unpacking?
Just about.
No surprise there. Do you think you could help Nico unpack his boxes? Ada nods without hesitation.
Sure. Come on, Nico.
Nico immediately recognizes this as an opportunity for his sister to do most of the work.
Okay,
he agrees happily. Nico finally stops terrorizing me with the baseball and sprints up the steps two at a time to join Ada in his room. I start to tell her not to do all the work for him, but that's a lost cause. At this point, I've got about 60 boxes of my own to unpack. As long as it gets done, I'll be happy. We were extremely lucky to get this house. We lost half a dozen bidding wars in neighborhoods that weren't even as nice as this one. I didn't think we had a snowball's chance in hell of landing this quaint former farmhouse in a town with such highly rated public schools. I almost cried with joy when our real estate agent called me to let me know that the house was ours. At 10% less than asking. The universe must have decided we deserved some good luck. I peek out through the front window at the moving truck parked on the street outside the house. We live in a little cul-de-sac with two other houses, and across the way, I can see the silhouette of a person at the window. My new neighbor, I suppose. I hope they're friendly. A banging sound comes from within the truck, and I wrench open the front door to see what's going on. I jog outside just in time to see my husband emerging from the truck with one of his friends who's agreed to help with the move. I wanted to hire a moving company, but he insisted he could do it himself with his friends helping. And I have to admit, we need to save every penny if we want to make our mortgage payments. Even at 10% below asking, our dream house wasn't cheap. My husband is holding up one half of our living room sofa, his t-shirt plastered to his torso with sweat. I cringe because he's in his 40s and the last thing he needs is to throw out his back. I expressed this concern to him when we were planning the move, and he acted like it was the silliest thing he'd ever heard, even though I throw out my back every other week. And it's not from lifting a sofa. It's from, like, sneezing. "Will you please be careful, Enzo?" I say. He looks up at me, and when he grins, I melt. Is that normal? Do other women who are married to somebody for over 11 years still get wobbly in the knees over them sometimes? No? Just me? I mean, it's not like it's every minute. But boy, he still gets me. It doesn't hurt that he seems to get inexplicably sexier every year. And I just get a year older. "I am careful," he insists. "Besides, this couch is light, weighs almost nothing." That warrants an eye roll from the guy holding the other end of the couch. But admittedly, it's not exactly a heavy-duty couch. We got it from IKEA, which is a step up from the last couch, which we grabbed from the curb. Enzo used to have this theory that all the best furniture came from the curb outside our apartment. We've grown up a little since then. I hope. As Enzo and his friend bring the sofa into our beautiful new house, I raise my eyes again to look at the house across the way. Number 13 Locust Street. There's still someone staring at me from the window. The house is dark inside, so I can't see much, but that silhouette is still at the window. Somebody is watching us. But there's nothing ominous about that. The people in that house are our new neighbors, and I'm sure they are curious about who we are. Whenever I used to see a moving truck outside our building, I always watched through the window to see who was moving in, and Enzo would laugh and tell me to stop watching and go introduce myself. That's the difference between him and me. Well, it's not the only difference. in an effort to change my ways and be more friendly like my husband. I lift a hand to wave at the silhouette. May as well meet my new neighbor at 13 Locust. Except the person at the window doesn't wave back. Instead, the shutters suddenly snap closed, and the silhouette disappears. Welcome to the neighborhood.
2.
Enzo is carrying the last of the boxes into the house while I'm standing out on our sparse lawn, avoiding unpacking while fantasizing about how the lawn will look after my husband rejuvenates it. Enzo is a wizard when it comes to lawns. That's sort of how we first met. This one almost looks like a lost cause with its brown patches and crumbly soil, but I know that a year from now, we will have the nicest lawn in the cul-de-sac. I am lost in my fantasies when the door of the house directly next to ours, 12 Locust Street, swings open. A woman with a butterscotch-colored layered bob emerges from the house, wearing a fitted white blouse and red skirt with spiky high heels that look like they could be used to gouge out somebody's eye. Why does my mind always go there? Unlike the neighbor across the way, she seems friendly. She raises her hand in an enthusiastic greeting and crosses the short path of cobbled pavement separating our houses. "Hello," she gushes. "It is so good to finally meet our new neighbors. I'm Suzette Lowell." As I reach out and take her manicured hand in mine, I'm rewarded with an impressively painful handshake for a woman. "Millie Accardi," I say. "Lovely to meet you, Millie," she says. "You're going to absolutely adore living here." "I already do," I say honestly. "This house is amazing." "Oh, it really is," Suzette bobs her head. "It was lying empty for a while because, you know, such a small house is a hard sell, but I just knew the right family would come along." Small? Is she insulting our beloved house? "Well, I love it." "Oh, yes. It's so cozy, isn't it? And..." Her gaze rakes over our front steps, which have slightly crumbled, although Enzo swears he'll fix them. It's one of a long list of repairs we'll need to make. "Rustic. So rustic." Okay, she's definitely insulting the house. But I don't care. I still love the house. It doesn't matter to me what some snooty neighbor thinks. "So, do you work, Millie?" Suzette asks, her blue-green eyes zeroing in on my face. "I'm a social worker," I say, with a touch of pride. Even though I've been doing it for many years now, I still feel proud of my career. Yes, it can be exhausting, soul-wrenching, and the pay is nothing to get excited about. But I still love it. "How about you?" "I'm a real estate agent," she says, with an equal amount of pride. Ah, that explains the way she was insulting our house in real estate speak. "The market is jumping right now." Well, that's true. It occurs to me now that Suzette was not involved in the sale of this house. If she's a real estate agent, how come her neighbors didn't want her to sell their house? Enzo emerges from the truck, carrying more boxes, his t-shirt still clinging to his chest and his black hair damp. I remember filling one of those boxes with books and being worried that I had made it too heavy. And now, he's carrying not only that box, but he's put another one on top of it. My back aches just watching him. Suzette is watching him too, She follows his progress from the moving truck to our front door, a smile spreading across her lips.
"Your moving guy is really hot," she comments.
"Actually," I say, "that's my husband." Her jaw drops open. Looks like she thinks more of him than she does of the house.
"Seriously?"
"Uh-huh." Enzo has deposited the boxes in the living room, and he is coming out of the house for more.
How does he have the energy?
Before he reaches the truck, I wave him over. "Enzo, come meet our new neighbor, Suzette." Suzette quickly tugs at her blouse and tucks a strand of butterscotch hair behind her ear. If she could, I'm pretty sure she would have given herself a quick once-over in a compact mirror and refreshed her lipstick. But there's no time for that.
"Hello!"
she gushes with an outstretched hand. "It's so nice to meet you. Enzo, is it?" He takes her hand and flashes her a broad smile that makes the lines around his eyes crinkle.
"Yes, I am Enzo. And you are Suzette."
She giggles and nods eagerly. Her reaction is a bit over the top, but to be fair, he is turning up the charm. My husband has lived in this country for 20 years, and when we talk at the dinner table, his accent is relatively mild. But when he's trying to be charming, he turns up his accent so that he sounds like he's right off the boat. Or, as he would say, "right off boat."
"You are absolutely going to love it here,"
Suzette assures us.
"It's such a quiet little cul-de-sac."
"We already love it," I say.
"And your house is so cute,"
she says, finding yet another creative way to point out that our house is substantially smaller than hers.
"It will be perfect for you and your kids, especially with another little one on the way."
When she says that, she looks pointedly at my abdomen, which definitely does not contain any little ones on the way. There have not been any little ones in there for 9 years. The worst part is that Enzo swivels his head to look at me, and for a second, there's a glimmer of excitement on his face, even though he knows very well that I had my tubes tied during my emergency C-section with Nico. I look down at my belly, and I notice that my shirt does bulge in an unfortunate way. I'm dying a little bit inside. "I'm not pregnant," I say, for both the benefit of Suzette and, apparently, also my husband. Suzette clasps a hand over her red lipstick.
"Oh dear, I am so sorry. I just assumed..."
"It's okay," I say, cutting her off before she makes it worse. "Honestly, I love my body. When I was in my 20s, I was a stick figure, but now I finally have some womanly curves to show off, and I dare say my husband seems to enjoy them as well. That said, I'm throwing away this shirt."
"We have 2 children.
Enzo flings an arm around my shoulders, oblivious to Suzette's insult.
"Our son, Nico, and our daughter, Ada."
Enzo couldn't be more proud of our 2 children. He's a great father, and he would have wanted another 5 of them if I hadn't nearly died giving birth to our son. We would have loved to adopt or do foster care, but with my background, it was out of the question. "Do you have children, Suzette?" I ask. She shakes her head, a horrified look on her face.
"Absolutely not. I'm not the maternal type. It's just me and my husband, Jonathan. We are happily child-free."
Excellent. She has a husband of her own. she can stay away from mine.
But there is a little boy in the house across from yours, she says. He's in third grade.
Nico is in third grade, too, Enzo says eagerly. Maybe we can introduce them.
When we moved, we had to pull the kids out of school right in the middle of the year. Trust me, the last thing you want to do is yank two grade school age kids out of their classes in the middle of March. I was racked with guilt. But we couldn't afford to pay the mortgage and the rent until the end of the school year, so we didn't have a choice. Nico, who is outgoing like his father, didn't seem bothered by it. For Nico, a whole room full of new kids to impress with his antics would be a fun adventure. Ada took the news calmly, but later I found her crying in her room at the thought of leaving her two best friends behind. I'm hoping by the fall they will both be settled in and the trauma of moving in the middle of the school year will be a distant memory.
You can try to introduce yourself to them, Suzette shrugs. But the woman who lives there, Janice, is not very friendly. She hardly ever comes out of the house except to bring her son to the bus stop. I mostly just see her in the window, staring out at the street.
Such a busybody.
Oh, I say, wondering how Janice can apparently never leave her house, yet also be so nosy. I look across the way at 13 Locust. The windows all look dark, despite the fact that it's the middle of the day and the people who live there seem to be home.
I hope you're getting some good blinds for your windows, she tells me, because she has a great view.
Enzo and I simultaneously rotate our heads in the direction of our brand new house, the realization suddenly dawning on us that not one of the windows in the entire house has blinds or curtains. How did we not realize that? Nobody told us we needed to buy blinds. Every home we ever lived in before now came with them already installed.
I will buy blinds, Enzo murmurs in my ear. Thank you.
Suzette looks amused by our cluelessness.
Your real estate agent didn't remind you to buy blinds?
Guess not, I mumble. I suppose the implication is that Suzette would have reminded us if she had been our real estate agent. But it's a bit late for that. For now, we are blindless.
I can recommend an excellent company that will install blinds for you, she says. They did our house last year. They put in these beautiful honeycomb blinds on the first and second floor, and then these adorable shutters in the attic. I can't even imagine what such a thing would cost. Far more than we have to spend, that's for sure.
No, thank you, Enzo says. I can do.
She winks at him.
Yes, I'll bet you can.
Seriously? I am getting a little sick of this woman hitting on my husband right in front of me. It's not like other women don't do the same, but for God's sake, we're neighbors. Can't she be a little more subtle? Part of me is tempted to say something, but I'd rather not make an enemy 5 minutes after moving here.
Also, she says, I wanted to invite your family over for dinner. The two of you, of course, and the children can come too.
She doesn't look excited about the idea of our kids entering her home, and she doesn't even know about Nico's propensity to break something expensive within 5 minutes of entering any room.
Sure, that will be wonderful,
Enzo says.
Fabulous, she beams up at him. How about tomorrow night? I'm sure your kitchen won't be up and running by then, so this will take the stress off.
Enzo looks at me with raised eyebrows. He has boundless energy for social events, but I'm the introverted one, so I appreciate that he defers to me before accepting. Truthfully, I loathe the idea of spending an evening with this woman. She seems a bit extra. But if we're going to be living here, aren't we obligated to be friends with the neighbors? Isn't that what normal suburban families do? And maybe she won't be so bad once I get to know her. Sure, I say. That will be really nice. We hardly know anyone in Long Island. Suzette throws her head back and laughs, revealing a row of pearly white teeth.
Oh, Millie!
I glance over at Enzo, who shrugs. Neither of us seem to know what's so funny. What?
You don't know how you sound, she giggles. Nobody says in Long Island.
They don't?
No!
She shakes her head like I'm just too much.
It's on Long Island. You're not in an island. That sounds so ignorant. You're on an island.
Enzo is scratching at his dark hair. He has zero gray hair on his head, by the way. If not for my bottles of Clairol, I would be pretty much gray and have been ever since Nico was born. All Enzo's got is a few gray strands in his beard when he grows it out. But when I pointed that out to him, he dug around on his scalp until he found a single gray hair to show off to me, as if that made it any better. So, I don't understand, I say. Does that mean people should say they live on Hawaii or on Staten Island? The smile drops off her face.
Well, Staten Island is an entirely different case.
I try to catch Enzo's eye, but he just seems amused by the whole thing. Well, we are happy to be here on Long Island, Suzette, and we look forward to having dinner with you tomorrow night.
I can't wait,
she says. I have to force my own smile. Should I bring anything?
Oh!
She taps her index finger against her chin.
Why don't you bring dessert?
Great. Now I have to figure out what on earth I'm going to bring for dessert that will live up to Suzette's standards. I'm thinking a box of Oreos won't cut it.
Sounds good.
As Suzette walks down the path back to her own much larger house, her heels clicking on the pavement with each step, I feel a twinge of something in the pit of my stomach. I was so excited when we bought this house. We've been crammed into tiny apartments for so long, and I finally have my dream house. But now, for the first time, I wonder if I have made a terrible mistake moving here.
3. Tonight, the four of us are having dinner at our kitchen table. Do you know what a kitchen table is? That's a table that fits inside our kitchen. Yes, our kitchen now has room in it for a whole table. Our last kitchen barely had room in it for a person. We ordered Chinese food from a restaurant that had sent us a menu in the mail. I'm not very picky about food, and neither is Enzo. The only thing he won't eat is Italian food. He says that no restaurant does it right, and it's always a disappointment. But he'll eat delivery pizza, because that's not actually Italian food in his assessment. Ada is easygoing in the same way, but Nico is super picky about food. That's why, while the rest of us are chowing down on lo mein noodles and beef with broccoli, I have prepared a plate of white rice for my son, seasoned with a pat of butter and lots of salt.
I'm pretty sure buttered rice is flowing through his veins right now. "Our first dinner in the new house," I announce proudly. "We are finally christening our kitchen table."
"Why do you keep saying that, Mom?"
Nico says.
"Why do you keep saying we're christening everything?"
To be fair, I'm not sure he's ever heard me use the word christen before. And I have used it at least 5 times in the last several hours. When we were sitting on the couch earlier, I said we were christening the living room. Then, when he went out in the backyard with his baseball, I said he was christening our yard. And at some point, I might have mentioned that I would be christening the toilet.
"Your mom is just excited about the house."
Enzo reaches for my hand across the kitchen table. "And she is right. It's a very beautiful house."
"It's kind of nice," Nico concedes. "But I wish it were painted red and had arches on it that were yellow."
Okay, I'm pretty sure my son is telling me he wants to live at McDonald's.
"I don't care. We bought this house for the two of them.
Back in the Bronx, we were cramped into a tiny apartment, and men were starting to leer at Ada while she walked home. Now, we are in an amazing school district, and they will have room to play in the backyard and wander around the neighborhood without worrying about being mugged. Even if they don't appreciate it, this is the best thing we could have done for them."
"Mom?"
Ada pushes some noodles around her plate, and I realize she's hardly eaten anything.
"Are we starting school tomorrow?"
Her dark eyebrows are scrunched together. Both of my kids look so much like their father, to the point where it seems they are both clones of him, and I was merely the incubator who birthed them. Ada is beautiful, with long jet black hair and brown eyes that take up half her face. Enzo says she looks just like his sister, Antonia. Right now, she is coming to that transition between child and adult, and someday soon, she will be a woman who will turn heads. When that happens, I'm fairly sure Enzo is going to have to walk around with a baseball bat all the time. He won't admit it, but he is very protective of her.
"Do you feel ready to start school?" I ask her.
"Yes," she says, even as she's shaking her head no.
"It's the end of their spring break," I point out, "so nobody will have seen each other for about a week. They probably won't even remember each other."
Ada does not look even the tiniest bit amused. But Nico giggles.
"I can drive you tomorrow," Enzo offers. "We could take my truck."
Her eyes light up because she loves riding her father's truck.
"Can I sit in the front seat?"
Enzo looks at me with raised eyebrows. He loves to indulge them, but I appreciate that he won't do it without checking with me.
"Actually, honey," I say, "you're still a little too small for the front seat, but soon."
"I want to take the bus tomorrow," Nico declares. We were too close to the elementary school last year to get the school bus, so now he has elevated taking the bus into an experience on par with visiting a chocolate factory filled with Oompa Loompas. It's all he can seem to think about.
"Please, Mom."
"Sure," I say. "And Ada, if you want to go with your dad."
"No," she says firmly. "I'll go on the bus with Nico."
Whatever else you can say about my daughter, she is incredibly protective of her little brother. I heard that toddlers can be very jealous when you bring a new baby into the house, but Ada was immediately enamored with Nico. She abandoned all her dolls and took care of him instead. I have some achingly adorable photos of Ada cradling Nico on her lap, feeding him his bottle. Also, Nico scoops more white rice into his mouth, only about 80% of which manages to get through his lips. The rest is speckling his lap and the floor below him.
Can I have a pet, Mom? Please?
I say. You said when I was older and more responsible, I could have a pet. Nico reminds me. Well, he is older. As for the responsible part.
A dog?
Ada asks hopefully. We still have to get the yard fenced in before we consider a dog, I tell them. Plus, I'd like to be on more stable financial ground before we add another member to our family.
How about a turtle, then?
Ada suggests. I shudder. No, please not a turtle. I hate turtles.
I don't want a dog or a turtle, Nico says. I want a praying mantis.
I nearly choke on a broccoli floret.
A what? He's actually a good pet,
Enzo chimes in. Very easy to take care of.
Oh my God. Enzo knows that Nico wants to bring this horrible thing into our house? No, we are not getting a praying mantis.
But why not, Mom?
Nico presses me. They are super cool. I'll keep it in my room and you don't ever have to see it. Unless you want to see it. He flashes me that endearing smile of his. Right now, he has this adorable round face and a gap in his teeth. But you can just tell that in another 6 or 7 years, he's going to be breaking hearts like his father used to before we were together.
I don't care if I see it, I say. I'll know it's there.
We will keep it contained,
Enzo tells me, flashing me his own version of that same smile. Damn my husband for being so handsome.
What do you feed it? I ask.
Flies, Nico says. No, I shake my head. Nope, we are not doing this.
Don't worry, Nico says. They're flightless flies.
They are walks,
Enzo jokes.
It won't even cost you anything, Nico adds. We're going to grow the flies ourselves.
No. No, no, no. Enzo reaches under the table and gives my knee a squeeze.
Mili, we pulled the kids out of school and made them move here. If Nico wants a praying mantis...
Bullshit. He wants the praying mantis too. It's just the type of thing that Enzo would think is cool. I look over at Ada for help. But she's too absorbed in making little piles of noodles on her plate. She is spelling out her name in noodles. She doesn't generally play with her food, so she must be really anxious.
If I were to say yes, I say, where would we purchase a praying mantis?
Enzo and Nico high-five each other, which would be adorable. If I wasn't so terrified of this insect they're bringing into the house.
We can buy a praying mantis egg, Nico explains.
God, how long have they been discussing this? It seems like they have a very firm plan in mind.
And then it hatches and there are hundreds of them.
Hundreds? But he's okay, Enzo says quickly. They all eat each other, so then usually there's only one or two left.
And then we can christen them, Nico adds. Okay, Mom?
I imagine how horrified Suzette Lowell would be to discover there is a praying mantis as well as a colony of flightless flies in her perfect cul-de-sac, which is the only thing amusing about this situation. Okay, fine. I guess I'm going to let this happen. But I swear to God,
If there are flies all over my beautiful new home, Nico is going to have to move out.
4. If I unpack one more box, I am going to throw up. I have unpacked 5 billion boxes today. That's a conservative estimate. And now, I am standing in the master bathroom, staring down at a cardboard box on which I wrote "bathroom" in permanent magic marker, and I just don't have the will to open it, even though it has crucial bathroom stuff inside of it. Maybe I can brush my teeth with my finger tonight. The sound of footsteps grows louder outside the door, and a second later, Enzo pops his head into the bathroom. He smiles when he sees me standing there with my bathroom box. "What are you doing?" he asks. My shoulders sag. "Unpacking." "You unpack all night," he points out. "Enough. We do it tomorrow." "But we need this stuff. It's for the bathroom." Enzo looks like he's going to try to talk me out of it. But then he thinks better of it. Instead, he reaches into the pocket of his worn blue jeans and pulls out the pocket knife he always carries around. His father gave him that knife when he was a boy, and it is engraved with his initials, E.A. The knife is nearly 40 years old, but he keeps it razor sharp so that it cuts easily through the tape holding the box of bathroom supplies together. Together, we unload the bathroom supplies. When I first met this man who made me weak at the knees, I never imagined a future in which we would be standing together in a bathroom, picking through bars of soap and sticky shampoo bottles. But strangely enough, Enzo has happily taken to domestic life. We had been living together for less than a year when, in spite of diligent birth control use, I missed my period. I was terrified of telling him, but he was over the moon excited. "Now we get to be a family," he said. His parents and sister were all dead, and I never realized how important it was to him to start a family of his own. We got married a month later. And now, over a decade later, I am living the sort of domestic, suburban life that I never dreamed of for myself. Not with Enzo. Not with anyone. A lot of people would call it boring, but I love it. All I ever wanted was a normal, quiet sort of existence. It just took me longer than most people to get it. Enzo removes his razors from the box, and now it's finally empty. We are finished. Okay, we have another 5 billion boxes left in the house, but at least one more has been emptied, so now it's 5 billion minus one. I expect we will finish unpacking sometime in the next 3 or 4 decades. "Okay," Enzo says. "Now we are done for the day." "Yes, I agree." He glances over his shoulder at the queen-sized bed with a fresh sheet spread across it. Then he looks back at me with a grin on his face. "What?" I tease him. "Do you want to christen the bed?" "No," he says. "I want to defile it." I let out a laugh, which gets cut off when he grabs me and heaves me up into his arms, carrying me across the threshold to our bed in our beautiful new master bedroom. I would tell him to be careful about his back, but considering he lifted boxes that weigh twice as much as I do, I hope. I'm assuming he knows what he's doing. He doesn't stop until we reach the bed and he deposits me onto the sheets. Enzo rips off his t-shirt and climbs on top of me, kissing my neck. But as much as I want to be into this, my eyes get drawn to the two picture windows right next to our bed. Why didn't we get blinds? What kind of idiot moves into a house without making sure the windows are covered? From my position on the bed, I have a great view of the house across the way. The windows are dark, and yet I detect a flash of movement in one of the upstairs rooms. At least, I think I do. Enzo notices I've gone stiff and pulls away. What is wrong? The windows, I murmur. You can see everything. He raises his head, peering through our own window to 13 Locust Street. The lights are out. They are asleep. When I peer out the window this time, I don't see any signs of movement. But I saw it before, just a second ago. I'm sure of it. I don't think they are. He winks at me. So we give them a show. I stare at him. Fine, he grumbles. How about we turn out the lights? Fine. Enzo crawls off me so that he can flick off the light switch, plunging the room into darkness. I squirm on the sheets, unable to wrench my gaze away from the bare window. Do you ever wonder about why we got this house so cheap?
Cheap? Enzo bursts out.
We had to use all our savings to pay the deposit.
And the mortgages?
We got it below asking, though, I point out. Nothing was selling for below asking.
He's fixer-upper.
So were all the others. I prop myself up in bed. And we weren't able to win the auction on any of them. Enzo flashes me an exasperated look.
We get you your dream house, and now you have problem with dream house? We got lucky. Why is that so hard to believe?
Because, let's face it, I am never lucky.
Milly,
Enzo says in that husky voice that he knows I find impossible to resist.
Let us enjoy our first night in our dream house. Yes?
He climbs back into the bed beside me, and at this point, I'm helpless to resist his charms. I manage to take one last look out the window, and even though it's all the way across the street, I swear I can make out a pair of eyes on my body, watching us.
5.
Today, the kids are starting at their new school. Ada puts on the dress that I picked out for her first day. It's sleeveless and pale pink, and if my son wore it, it would be smeared with dirt and grease, probably before he even got out the front door. But she loves it, and will almost certainly manage to keep it clean. As for Nico, I'm just happy he managed to put on some clean clothes that didn't have any holes in them. I was advised that the school bus stops in front of 13 Locust Street, so I herd the kids out the door, past Suzette's house at 12 Locust, over to the house of the neighbor that I've been convinced has been staring at us through our shutterless windows since yesterday. Sure enough, there's a woman and a child waiting at the bus stop. But they're not what I expected. First of all, the woman is older than I expected. I'm not the youngest mother among the parents of my kids' friends, but this woman looks old enough to be my mother. She is bone thin, with wiry gray hair and spindly fingers that almost look like claws. And even though Suzette told me her son is Nico's age, the little boy at her side appears at least 2 years younger. He's just as emaciated as his mother, and even though it's a warm spring day, he's wearing a thick wool turtleneck sweater that looks extremely itchy and uncomfortable. Of course, maybe she's not his mother. Maybe she's his grandmother. She certainly looks old enough to be his grandmother, but I would never ask. I'm no Suzette. That's one of those things you don't say to a person when you first meet them, along the same lines as, "Are you pregnant?" Stupid lumpy shirt. As I approach them, the woman narrows her eyes at me through her horn-rimmed spectacles. Can't help but notice the silver chain attached to her glasses, which is something I had always associated with elderly people, although one of Ada's friends back in the Bronx wore one, so maybe they're cool again. "Hello," I say cheerfully, determined to befriend this woman. After all, I would love to make some friends in Long Island. Oops, I mean on Long Island. The woman shoots me a half-hearted smile that is more like a grimace. "Hello," she says, in the most expressionless tone I have ever heard. "My name is Millie," I say. She stares at me, a hollow look in her eyes. This is when most people would tell me their name, but she apparently didn't get the memo. "And these are Nico and Ada," I add. Finally, she places a hand on the little boy's shoulder. "This is Spencer," she says. "I'm Janice." The boy suddenly shifts, revealing what looks like a hook on the bottom of his backpack, which has an attachment coming off it that the woman is holding on to. Oh my God, it's a leash. The poor child is on a leash. "Nice to meet you," I say. Or should I say, good dog? "I hear Spencer is in third grade?" It seems impossible as I'm saying it. The little boy is nearly a head shorter than Nico, who is average height for his age. But the boy, Spencer, nods his head. "Yes," he confirms. "Cool!" Nico's eyes light up. "I have Mrs. Cleary as my teacher. Who do you got?" "Who do you have?" Janice corrects him. Nico peers up at her, blinking his dark brown eyes. "I said I have Mrs. Cleary," he says in a slow voice, like he thinks she's stupid. I stifle a laugh. Before Janice can clarify that she was attempting to